how it is to dwell in a furnace in a Chinese city during summer. This is a study I conducted between 2016 and 2020, more or less. I did fieldwork in 2017 and 2018, and later on I worked with an assistant who also compiled some oral histories. And you will see why these oral histories are interesting to understand body infrastructure relations in Chongqing. Temperatures in Chongqing have been rising more than the global trend, and this has, of course, caused urban heat island effects. In average, the temperature difference between urban and surrounding rural areas is around 10 degrees Celsius. So in the very urban area, a study measured 37, 38 degrees, and in the rural areas around, it was only 28 degrees Celsius. Actually, it's very interesting because a widespread rumor says that there are actually many days when the temperature reaches more than 40 degrees Celsius, but the government often does not publish the real data. Because if it would be above 40 degrees Celsius, these days count as heat days, and then the consequence would be people wouldn't have to go to work and to school. So in order to prevent that, the rumor says that actually official temperatures are always 38 or 39 degrees Celsius. So how do you keep cool in that hot and sticky climate? Until the mid-20th century, Chongqing's building stock was dominated by what they call the wooden houses on stilts. So these houses took advantage of the microclimatic conditions along the riverside. Here you can see Chongqing is located along the Yangtze River and also Jialing River. So there are always hillsides on both sides of the river. And this creates kind of a cooling effect from downhill to the uphills. And ventilation was facilitated by these slopes. And in addition, houses were built in the way how you see it up there. So they had what they call in the local language breathable walls made out of bamboo. And they also helped to combat humidity and to facilitate ventilation. Later on, a lot of houses have been built by local rammed earth construction. This was very popular and also cheap to produce. And in the collective memory, people always talk about that these walls, they are good, or they have the advantage of cooling in summer and keeping the heat in winter. For indoor climate control, these socialist buildings, they had integrated many passive means. For example, cross ventilation was kind of integrated into the built structure. They had the buildings were rather narrow, and they had windows on both sides, so ventilation was facilitated. My informants who lived in these buildings, they also recall that in the 70s and 80s in summer, most apartments heated up tremendously, and so the most pleasant place was actually outdoors in the shadowed spaces of the generally very green semi-public spaces. And so they cooled down collectively in public or semi-public spaces. So the indoors have gained relevance to bear the summer, and between 2002 and 2012, the number of air conditioning units per household has doubled from 1 to 2 units. So there's really an increase of cooling the indoors also since the turn of the century. Not only private spaces, but of course also restaurants, shopping malls. Of course, the older construction knowledge, such as inclusion of ventilation and considerations of insulation, public greenings, they have been abandoned in these concrete and steel-dominated modernist architecture, which is now much more energy intensive. And in the case of Chongqing, the cooling devices, they have not only changed the infrastructure and the built fabric, but they have also affected the urban climate. So my argument is that actually the rise of electricity consumption has led to environmental degradation, not in the city area anymore, but to other places. A second prize for cooling is also the changes in social life. With this transition from socialist to post-reform period, Chongqing's residents' heat mitigation strategies, they shifted from more collective, communal ways of cooling to individual retreats in cooled indoor spaces. A third price for cooling is socio-economic stratification. In the socialist period, Chongqing residents' way of cooling was not shaped by their income because the shaded outdoor spaces could be enjoyed by everyone. In the 80s, residents then purchased electric fans, window air conditioning, and later split unit air conditioning. So the purchase of these devices has, of course, depended on the socioeconomic means of a family because the costs for running these devices have not been affordable for everyone. The past dependency of concrete and steel modernism and the construction of poorly insulated high-rise buildings neglects the previous thermal knowledge that was integrated into a building's design. And today's high-rise buildings, they are widely responsible for the high electricity dependency in heat mitigation. And we think that the urban thermal governance of the future would do well to combine these insights from urban climatology, ethnography, and architectural design. Modern architecture has failed to recognize the energy potentials that could be found in the immediate surroundings. And we think it's necessary to also revise and think through the local practices of the past in order to develop an architecture of the future. We certainly have to continue mapping and simulating climatic conditions, but we also think it's very important to take into account qualitative data, especially ethnographic data, because factors such as energy pricing, governmental infrastructure investments, or social expectations, they are as important or they impact urban climates as much as wind speed and humidity do. And that's why we think there needs to be an interdisciplinary collaboration in the future. So urban planners and designers, they must consider the thermal realities of the place of intervention to understand economic, political, social, and cultural aspects that intervene into climate control.